13th, 2018 is hereby called to order. Deputy Mayor Kelly is getting to her seat.
I'm here.
I would like to welcome everyone to council meeting today. For your information, we do have an audio recording which is produced from each council meeting, and it is available on our website within 24 hours of council meeting. I would ask everybody to please turn your electronic devices on silent mode. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda as previously circulated? Hearing none, a motion to approve the agenda as circulated would be in order. Moved by Deputy Mayor Kelly, seconded by Councilor Frelick. Any discussion? Ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous, thank you. Under 3.0 presentations, we have 3.1, Ketchum Coochie Campground Infrastructure Update by Superintendent Jonathan Shepherd. Jonathan is running a bit late this morning, so with your permission, we will move on. Follow the agenda. When Jonathan comes, we'll switch back to the presentation mode. Under 4.0, we have no petitions to present today. Are there any petitions to be presented? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. That brings us to 5.0, public question comment session. Are there members of the gallery that would like to speak this morning? And if so, please state your name and your address and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less, please. Leon?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Harbison, College Street, Liverpool. A couple quick questions here. I'm wondering if you have the economic development report here and what have you. I just have a question. How many people do you have working in that department?
We have a director of economic development, Jenny Rocket. We have a development officer, Richard Lane, and we have Dana Henley, who provides support.
Okay, that's not four.
That is three.
Three.
2.33, technically.
Okay. I noticed, just a question, I know the regional is building the call center here next door, and I've noticed here in the last number of months, there's very few cars that I buy this morning to try to get any there. I assume it's still in business, isn't it?
It is, and to my understanding, they operate on shifts. So you would not find a significant number of vehicles there at any given time because they're spread out through the day.
One other thing there, I noticed the tax write-offs are coming up, not tax write-offs, but the tax sales are going to be approved or not approved there later on this morning. And it's showing there that for most of them, you did not get the value that you needed to write it off completely. And there's $227,000 that's coming up from somewhere. Is that been budgeted for?
It was not in the budget, but I'm confident that we will have an ability to cover that loss.
Okay, somewhere else in the budget. Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Leon. Thank you. Any other member of the gallery? Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm here for just one purpose, and that's to try to...
Could you state your name and address?
I'm Greg Gifton. I'm actually now in Greenfield, Queens County. I live now in Hansport. Spent 51 years here in the Liverpool area. And worked for a good length of time with a friend called Jim Bay. When we won the right to get moratorium to any more open net and fish farms in that area. So now I'm very much, I've been involved in this. After that was over, I said, I'm not going to stop fighting the battle. I need to continue the war. And so I've been at that ever since. Written volumes. Read in libraries, 10 or 12 years, a science degree, and involved in environmental regulations. So what I'm trying to do here today is I'm trying to persuade mayor and councilors to send a very, very strongly worded letter to the provincial government to deny any applications for any more open net benefit firms anywhere in Queens County, particularly where they've applied now. I'm talking about Gloria Gilbert and Kathy Milan, Ron Neufeld, Carol Kingley, Sol Donald Cameron, Bill Bryden in Newfoundland, Pete Lewis-Gate, who is a scientist who found the negative impact on lobsters, and, as I said, Alexander Morton in British Columbia. This is a group that know exactly what the situation is, the damage caused by open net and fish farming. The companies have a way of hiding their identity. They don't. You don't buy cooked seafood. You don't buy cooked salmon. It's the consumer attractive names to hide their identity. That fish, 240,000 were sold from Coffin Island that had ISA virus. They tried to process them secretly without telling anybody that they were caught. Up to that point, the federal government was paying $150 million for sick fish or dead fish. They tried to hide these and get them processed without being caught. They're not caught. Now it's accepted procedure for them to process fish that would die within months of processing. Those wind up in the supermarket in Canada, the U.S. won't accept them. And they're not identified. So what I'm saying to you, Council, Mayor and Council, we cannot catch up with the science that we already know. You talked about going on facts and not opinion. The opinion, obviously, for the company, is self-serving. So there's the opinions. Our facts, we have nothing to gain. I'm not a fisherman. I don't even live here anymore. But I'm going on support 100% of Beach Meadows and Eagle Head. And I'd say 70 or 80% of the people in Portland June area. We want to protect those beaches. We want to protect Carter's Beach, Somerville Beach. That's what we did before. We want to protect all the beaches and shorelines here. I would say one more thing. The disasters that happened down in Jordan Bay were predicted. Folks went in there. They got the money from the NDP government. They've been in there. And all of the disasters that were predicted by those of us who knew what was going to happen did happen. Prince Bevan did just ignore that. So, a motion, I'd like for somebody to call for a motion to send a very, very strongly worded letter to the provincial government to deny any application for any more open net and fish farms in Queenstown.
Thank you, Fred. I know that you're very passionate and dedicated to the cause, and you've spent 10 years researching and getting up to speed. Council is looking at all information that is available, and your comments this morning, especially on Salmon Wars and other films that are of interest to council, have been heard today. I am lucky. I have 40 years experience on fish, wildlife, and habitat conservation, including aquaculture. I have read almost everything that Alexander Morton has presented, and certainly you and I would agree on a number of issues. One of which I would propose is looking at carrying capacities of sites, as well as allowing the process that we have today, the new aquaculture process, to discover the scientific data that will be uncovered during that scoping option. I will not say that Council has a position at this point in time, because they do not. We have not taken a position, yes, in support or opposed. But certainly, your presentation from the gallery this morning will be considered by councillors as we move forward. And I do appreciate you taking the time
to come. Can I just comment on one comment you
yes.
made there? You talked about the new regulations. Those regulations were absolutely became almost totally inefficient. The fact that the review board for the OLA recommendations was front-loaded with industry support, with one person there from the Ecology Action Center to stand up for the environment. So basically all of those recommendations, 2 years study, $500,000, essentially all of those recommendations were shelved. So the new regulations, the word new means nothing. They haven't been changed, haven't been approved. They are still designed for the industry, by the industry. So new regulations mean nothing.
I think the significant change would be the fact that the review board will make the decision instead of the minister. And that removes political influence from this equation. But
we know the independent review board.
Well, one can't prejudge what their decision would be until they see the evidence, although I can understand your concern. Thank you very much, Greg. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this morning?
Please. My name's Brian Muldoon. I'm with, 980 Brooklyn Shore Road in Brooklyn Beach Meadows. I understand that Cook Industries did a presentation to council. During that presentation, Jeff Nickerson said, and it's quoted on your minutes, there is no sea lice in Nova Scotia. While I'm holding the document here, Veterinary Services for Marine Life, Nova Scotia, and it went to Jeff Nickerson. So Cook Industries can't say, oh, he's no longer with the company. And it says right here that they were treated ivermectin for sea lice. So they lied. I'm sorry, but here's the proof. Secondly, the Cook Industries says they're going to bring employment to the area, and I understand we all need employment. They say they have 10 full-time jobs. The Coffin Island Fish Farm is in my backyard. Every day I write in the journal how many employees are up there, and there's not 10. I'll tell you that right now. There's usually one, maybe none. For days there was none, because they put in an automatic feeder, and that person is feeding those fish from another county. So I don't believe they bring employment, and they will destroy our harbor. So thank you. That's all I have to say at this point. Hopefully one day I'll do a presentation. Oh, sorry. So we have one other point. We're doing a bit of a fundraiser awareness on November 22nd, Thursday evening. We're featuring Salmon Wars. It's a documentary. Please come. It's free or donation. And it's at the Zion United Church, Main Street in Liverpool. You're welcome to visit my Facebook page. My name is Brian Muldoon. I have some information on there. We also started a group, Protect Liverpool Bay. Please join that. And we're starting with a petition, and there will be a rally in front of Government House in Halifax. I hope everyone can come. If we can't, it's going to be at noon on November 26th. And the reason why we picked that day is because it's lobster opening season for here, and we want to protect our lobster industry. Our lobster industry is worth almost $2 billion, they say. And I just heard Bernadette Jordan say on the way here, 40% of the lobster in Nova Scotia come from Southwest. And if we put these open net fish farms in, they will destroy our harbors. We already know it. So thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Any other member of the gallery?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here again.
What's your state name,
my name is Ann Laws. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I am from 19 Old Meeting House Road, Beach Meadows. I've been a resident there since 1990, and my husband grew up in Eaglehead and has lived all his life in that area. I am here also to speak about the fish farm, the proposed expansion, and opposition. Express my opposition to come here to speak because Cook Aquaculture are known to be liars. That's a big statement, but it's not a slanderous one. Because anywhere that council choose to go and read, as I have not a science degree as Fred does, and I don't have the large multitude of talent that Brian has for seeking out the data that he has brought to you to show you that what Cook said to you here in their presentation was not accurate. We can be told anything. Their data can show anything. They need to be regulated by someone other than themselves. You're not dealing, you have such a huge, huge role to play. I know that it seems to be a provincial decision, and it is. It's also federal in that the environment is also a federal decision. Tourism. I was at a restaurant last night where the news headline that went across the screen was, Justin Trudeau promotes economic development through tourism for the provinces. Do you think the tourism industry is going to survive here as we cover the whole Nova Scotia fish farms and what that does? However, the science is that they are harmful. They are harmful to the ocean and they're harmful to lobsters. Lobsters at maturity go out into open ocean. And I know that many of you sit here and know fishermen, or maybe you are a fisherman. But in their youth, up to the age of 6, they stay in the bays. So they're eating what's on the ocean floor. I have young children. They swim at the beach. I want to know that there's no pesticide from those fish farms at the beach. But I don't want Cook doing it. I want an independent doing it. And because the government, provincially, is very much in agreement with the money economically that's brought from aquaculture, they are very much advocating for aquaculture in the oceans. Now, we know that there's land-based aquaculture. Mayor Dagley, I thank you for your time talking to me on the phone. And I know that Mayor Dagley talked to me about the cost involved and some of the new technologies that are going to make aquaculture more sustainable. However, the problem with all of this being is that Cook, the company that wants to come here, has time and time again been charged and paid fines for illegal use of pesticides for their association with killing lobster in the Bay of Fundy. So just in those two cases, $500,000 for each fine. Yes, they've paid them. And they made a mistake. And being human, we all think about, okay, they made a mistake. Well, they deserve another try. But now Washington State says, get out. We don't want you here anymore. Because of your poor maintenance of equipment, your wild Atlantic salmon have escaped. And you lied about the number of them that escaped. You lied in your independence with your data about how this equipment was maintained. I don't know about you, but when someone makes a mistake once, do you give them a chance again? But what about if they keep on making it? I don't think that Queens County, its residents, its coasts, its lobster fishermen, I'm appalled by what I learned about Jordan Bay. I can't tell you that I've been as passionate as I am now about protecting this area, but I'll tell you, once you learn, you're responsible for what you learn. And I thank you today for listening, but please don't just listen. Don't just listen. Educate yourself. I thank you, Fred and Brian, for the education you've given me. I thank you for trying to educate me as well. But I will go forward and I will be a person who is in opposition to this, and I will speak vocally about it. And I hope you learn, and I hope you do as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Wayne. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
My name is Donna Dexter. I'm here on behalf of Queen's Day Care. And I have copies of what I'm going to say. If you like, I could have them distributed to the council.
You can do that after.
Afterwards? Sure. Okay. So, I've heard some passionate people here this morning talking about fish farms, and I support them. And at the same time, I am very passionate about the future of here. My granddaughter, she calls every morning while she's having
And that's why I'm passionate, because I feel so strongly that a community that wants to grow needs a daycare, a licensed daycare. So I'm here today. I know the big decision is coming up soon, and I want to share a little bit more factual information with the people who are making the decisions. So we all know about licensed childcare. We know it's not babysitting. It's not a part-day preschool program, although we do offer that too. Licensed childcare is a carefully regulated and controlled system of care for children when they are separate from their families. Over the past 30 to 40 years, and that's in my adult lifetime, there's been a big change in the importance to families of having licensed childcare. So this morning I'd like to help you to understand why Queen's Daycare is having such a challenge finding another facility. In our search for space, these are the buildings we've considered. We've looked at local school buildings. We looked at the old Anglican Church Hall on Main Street. We looked at the downstairs area of the former Sam's store. We've looked at Brooklyn Centennial School, now Wasubeck. We've looked at the former Milton School. We looked at the Sandy Cove Hall, to name a few. And we could not find anything that would meet our regulation requirements, even though we were prepared to do renovations. The former Mount Pleasant School already meets our licensing regulations. If we should move to a new space or create a new space, many of the regulations that have been grandfathered in where we are right now would have to be upgraded to meet current standards. The regulations that are the most challenging for us to meet in the building that we already, in the building that we're looking for, we have to have 30 square feet of unobstructed play space for each child in the room. So for our license capacity, we would need a building that is 1,260 square feet, and that's just for the classroom space. Each of those rooms must have natural lighting through a window or windows with a glass area of at least 10% of the total floor area. We must have one toilet and one sink for every 10 children, so a bathroom that can accommodate four toilets and four sinks. We must have a separate washroom for staff. We must have a staff room. And then, in addition to, and this is one of the toughest ones, in addition to these indoor space regulations, we must have a playground that has 75 square feet of play space for each child that will be using the outdoor play space. That's a total of 3,150 square feet of playground space. And the playground must be enclosed by a fence that's at least 4 feet high. And then, in addition to the regulations, we have to have parking space for staff and a safe area for parents to pick up and drop off their children. We've consulted with counselors, we've consulted with the mayor, we've consulted with region staff, board members, parents, staff, everybody's driving all around Queens County looking at buildings thinking, could it work, could it work, could it work? Never could find anything. Now these regulations seem tough, and at times they seem a little bit over the top, but we realize that they are essential to the safety and the health of our children, many of whom are in attendance with us all day. Some arrive at 7:30 in the morning and they don't leave till 5:30 in the afternoon. So they can't be cramped together. They need space, space to play, space to get away from people, and yet it is very difficult to find rental space in Liverpool that can meet those qualifications. So those are the major regulation hurdles that have prevented us. We've investigated literally every space, and then, lo and behold, you've heard the story about the brick. You bang on the brick, and you bang on the brick, and it doesn't move, and all of a sudden, one day, the brick will move. I was talking to Kim Maslin. She says, why don't you approach a local developer? And she gave me the name, and so I did. And after numerous conversations, looking at possible options, this developer has agreed to support us if we are able to remain in our current building.
offered to partner with us for consultation and to advise us as new property owners. He's also offered financial support, and hold on, because this is unbelievable. He has offered financial support from his own pocket to cover any financial shortfall we may have over the next 1 or 2 years, with no expectation of repayment. This amazing generosity indicates his faith in Queens Daycare, as well as his commitment to Queens County and to the importance of licensed child care for economic growth and development. He's an answer to our prayers, and he's offering us hope and support at a time that we really need it, because we are facing the end of 34 years of amazing support from the region of Queens, which we couldn't have long without. So we are very encouraged by this, after being very discouraged for a year and a half. We're also encouraged right now by our enrollment. In spite of the pre-primary program which recently opened at McGuire Academy, and in spite of the fact that it's well known around the community by our parents that we could lose our building and we might have to shut down, we currently have 33 children enrolled, which is 78% utilization of our license capacity. We enroll new children almost every month, and we're pleased to offer affordable child care to parents regardless of their family income, and we accept all children regardless of their abilities. So I hope this clarifies a little bit of the challenge we're facing and the dedication we have to continuing to offer this support. I want to make something very clear. I hate to say this because just saying it seems like it's a possibility, and I don't want this to be a possibility, but it is. But I have to say very clearly today that if there's a no vote to our proposal, it means we're closing down the daycare. We have no other options. In Nova Scotia at this time, there are only two counties without licensed child care. That's Victoria County and Guysborough County. ULIS counselors have the ability to ensure that Queens Daycare continues to provide licensed child care and employment, or, with a no vote, to close the doors of Queens Daycare, making Queens County one of three counties in Nova Scotia without a license for a child care center.
Thank you, Donna. And I know that you're fully aware that Donna, I know that you're fully aware that the request for proposals closes on the 16th, and of course staff will look through all of the responding submissions and make a recommendation to council after that. So we do appreciate you coming today and informing us more fully on the issue that we're dealing with.
Thank you.
Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
Scott Christian, 38 Mansfield Drive. I just want to second my support for continuation of the daycare. Speaking as someone who relocated here about a year ago, it's really difficult. Even in the current state, there's no child care full-time licensed child care available for any children who are under the age of 18 months. So that's difficult enough. And I think people who are born and raised Liverpudlians, they can find somewhere to put their kids. They know a relative or family, friend or something like that who can take care of their kids. We want to encourage more people to come here. We have an aging population, and I think that there's really promising signs of new people relocating here. I can tell you it's a massive, massive impediment and detriment to anyone considering relocating here if there's no availability of a licensed daycare center here. Our son Lachlan is one of the 33 people enrolled at that daycare, and we're very grateful and fortunate that it does exist. And quite frankly, my wife and I both work full-time jobs, and we would be in a very difficult situation if the daycare were to close. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any other member of the public gallery? Yes.
Hi, my name is Maddie Langle. I live on Park Street, and I would like to show my support for the daycare too. I have a 2-year-old daughter. She actually is not enrolled at Queens Daycare. She's in a whole
dramatically. And we don't need no fish farm. We don't need anything like that. Have family that's in the fishery. I grew up with the fishery. I still have a brother-in-law who's an officer fisherman. And we don't need that. I'm also in support of the daycare. I'd like to see it remain open. I have a niece-in-law right here that's going to lose her job at the farmers. I have a little fella right there that's my great nephew that's going to be going to that daycare. So we need to keep our daycare and we need to get rid of the fish farm.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery this morning?
I'm Kristen Lewis from Milton, Milton Street. I just want to say that fish farms have no place here. It's pollution. That's pollution. Just look at the pollution that it's going to cause. We are not allowed to pollute, are we? No, we'll get fined. But you're going to invite in a company to pollute here? What about the future? These children need a future. Don't pollute it. Don't. When you pollute water, you kill the animals in the water, you kill the fish, you kill all the birds around it, and these people will have nowhere. There'll be no tourism, there'll be nothing. This is turning into a dumping ground for our province. Don't let that happen. We have to stop it now.
Thank you. Any other member of the public gallery?
I'm a new resident here, and my name is Terrence Lee. I'm in Brooklyn. I have been taking my dog over to my head, and Greg and Rod taking my dog to Beach Meadows on leash. But during the summer, when I take my dog over to Beach Meadows, it's a really bad stink. It was really bad for all the people that live on that shore. That comes from the fish farm. I also have done some research, and we don't need fish farms. They're polluting. I don't like fish farming. I don't like farming too much in my interior. But there's some research I've done where we sustain the blue. That also is a fish farm, and it's not breeding, it's land-based. That's a great alternative. We want jobs, we want to be set a standard here for the Liverpool and Queens County, and not be polluting. So I stand with the moderator of the purchase and not have a fish farm there that's breeding and climbing on the lobster industry, the tourism,
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other member of the gallery? We have Kim. Yes?
Kim Williams, Barr Street. I would love for some of these people that are so passionate about one individual cause to actually be passionate about everything that happens in this area. Myself, Bill, Leon, and the latest gentleman to join our group, we're the only ones that sit here and pay attention, have input to council on a regular basis. We're the ones that are here to see what's going on in our community. We had a great big presentation here the other day. It was still just our usual crew. People say that they want to be part of this community, they want to have an effect on this community. Well, come out and support your counselors in that. Come out and actually pay attention to the council meetings. This is where you learn what's going on. There's presentations all the time about stuff that affects your lives in this community. Like this one about Kedgy. There was ones that have been on forestation and stuff like that. Nobody shows up. Nobody watches them. Nobody else sees them. You're losing out on so much information by just coming up for one particular cause. Pay attention to everything that's going around you, and you'll find that your life will be so much richer, you'll know so much more, and it'll be much more educated.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery?
I'm Carol Smith. I live on 92 Waterloo Street, and I'm a daycare board in Liverpool. As Don says, what makes us so passionate? We're not really sure. It's like your grandmother, really. You know, we've had the children, we're in this to support the women, and if you're talking about bringing jobs,
Gallery.
I'm Ashley Christian. I'm new to Queens County. I've been here for about a year. And just wanted to show my support for the daycare. Our son goes there and has been there for about 3 months. And it's been really amazing to see just how he's changed in that time, verbally and socially. And really, if the daycare were to close, we may even be to the point of looking for other employment. Because for us, bringing him to Bridgewater, an alternative daycare is not an option. So please take that as inspiration.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery?
I just have one more comment. How can you let in a company that you know is going to pollute and has no plan of cleaning it up? Because that wouldn't happen in any other situation. You know they're going to destroy the bay. It will be destroyed. Who is going to clean that up? Can the fish clean that up themselves? No, it's a dead zone. So how can we do this? It's criminal. So when it's looked back upon in 20, 30, 40 years, we'll look back on this as criminal if we let in these fish farms. Because it's selling out our future for a couple dollars an hour.
Thank you for your comments. I think it would be fitting if I clarify at the present point in time that the Provincial Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture is totally in control of the process regarding the option for scoping the bay, receiving applications, and the review panel responsible for collecting that information and making a determination on whether they accept the application, reject the application, or amend it. The Region of Queens would perform a function similar to a citizen. Any comments we would have would be looked at as part of the process. We are not in control. And I just want to make that clear that council is very passionate about many of these issues, and it's a learning curve whereby we are looking to find additional data, and hopefully it will all unfold and determine what the future will bring or will not bring.
Mr. Mayor, in all due respect, I'm taking a second chance, but where I wanted to make certain was my initial statement, is that you also, even though this is a provincial decision, we've seen what the DFA has done under the NDP government and the Liberal government, yet the NDP paid them to do it. The Liberal government has been just like, I hate to use the word, but the DFA has been like the government. Have them collect on the loan. What you need to do is take a stand for this community. You and the councillors need to take a stand, even though it's a provincial decision. You're laying it on them and say you're not going to say anything ahead of time. You need to know, they need to know what your stand is here, what people of Queens County stand is here, and you need to send them in the strongly worded letter that Queens County does not want any more open net pen fish farms anywhere on any coastline in Queens County. Take that stand, send it in to them. That's part of the information. If you want to wait to give them the information after it's all happened, that's not good. So
I well appreciate your position, Fred, and thank you for that. Council has heard the comments today, and we will, at some point, make a determination. There's no doubt. We'll make a determination one way or another. Anyway, I thank members of the public gallery this morning for attending and voicing your comments and positions. It's very appreciated as part of the public process. We now have Jonathan Shepherd from Kitchen-Kuchik National Park here to do his presentation. And I would advise that all are welcome to stay for the presentation or to leave at any point during the council meeting today. If you do leave, please leave quietly, and certainly it is appreciated. Thank you. Jonathan, if you would like to come forward to the presentation desk. I do understand that your presentation is loaded, and we appreciate you coming.
Excuse me, we were full-time jobs. I don't appreciate that. Like, judging us because we can't come here as often as you, that's... I don't appreciate that. Saying run away. I have a meeting to go to. I'm a young professional. I don't appreciate that at all. To be totally honest. Said, yeah, go run away. Please, I'm here standing up for my child, and now I'm going to return to my job.
We may, council, we may remain respectful. Every individual has an obligation, and we respect that.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I've got some of these to pass around as well. I apologize for the schedule.
Oh, that's all right.
Sounds like that. It's Sunday morning or already.
Yeah.
No.
Thank you, Jonathan. We understand you were a little behind this morning, and we have moved on to other items on the agenda during that time, so now we're back to your presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Council. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Again, yes, I sincerely apologize. I had another issue I had to attend to this morning with the sick child and school drop-off, so I apologize for only getting here now. My name is Jonathan Shepherd. I'm the site superintendent at Kijimukujik National Park and National Historic Site. And I wanted to take a few minutes today just to explain an upcoming infrastructure update that we are going to be doing at Kijimukujik. And the reason why we brought it before council here, talking to Councillor Johnson and also talking to the mayor, it is going to have some impacts, long-term positive impacts, but also some short-term negative impacts that we wanted to bring before council, make sure it was clear what we were doing, and also to begin a discussion about how we can maybe mitigate some of those local impacts to the actual work of construction itself. So again, thank you very much for the time. Jeremy's Bay Campground is the primary campground at Kijimukujik, as many of you probably already know. And that is a facility that was established in the late 1960s, and ultimately it has had very few upgrades since that time. So the buildings, the facilities, the utilities, sewer, water, etc., have all outgrown their useful life. So what we are looking to do is we're looking to do a major infrastructure investment in that facility. This campground is important not only to us at Kijimukujik, but also even across the country in national parks. It is, on opening day reservations, the third busiest campground, and that's only behind Banff and Jasper. So, you know, it has a really loyal following. We have a lot of local constituents that really use that campground over and over. We're also close enough to Halifax that we receive a lot of the main traffic to Halifax. So it is a significant asset. This infrastructure project that we're talking about will be the first major upgrade to the facility in 50 years. And what the scope of the project is that we're looking ultimately to tear down all of the 10 washroom buildings built through the campground and replace those with new washroom and shower facilities. And also what most people will not see, which is the underground sewer system, water treatment facility, that's all being upgraded as well. And we see this as kind of a major investment in as part of not only our mandate to connect Canadians with nature, but also understanding this is both a Parks Canada and a regional tourism driver, that we need to make sure that we're continuing to invest in this. So a couple things I would just flag for you, and not to spend a lot of time on this, but we are looking to really have progressive design on this. So because we know the last buildings lasted us 50 years, we anticipate these ones will have to do the same. So we're doing a long lifespan environmental design in terms of what we're building. We're also looking at the socially progressive design for this facility and infrastructure so that we're increasing personal privacy and safety within each building. We're having them universal access, family friendly. We will also be the first national park in Canada to have full gender neutral washrooms, which we see as a way of making ourselves relevant over the next 50 years with the way that those are going. So part of the reason why I wanted to be here today is that it's clear as we do this amount of work that it's going to have impacts to the visitor experience, to our revenue stream and our operation, and also because of that to local stakeholder partners as well and economic partners. So we don't take the decision lightly. In order to construct this, there are going to have to be closures in the campground. And so what we did is we created five different construction windows about how the work could proceed and how it could take place. And we measured each of those against these criteria that you see up there, six criteria. So measuring against revenue, against project cost, against construction feasibility,
against visitor experience and safety, against our sort of communications realm, and also understanding local tourism, political and economic stakeholders. And I won't go into full details on those, but I guess what I would say, and you may have seen some of this when we announced this in August, that there were questions about why we couldn't have done the construction in a way that did not affect the visitor camping experience. And I think they're fair questions. I guess what I would say to you is that we did a really detailed risk analysis. We went through all the construction windows and looked at all the factors. And again, not to bore you with the details, but if you think about some of those ones, like people asked us if we could construct this only in the wintertime, for example, and not at all during the camping season. Looking at high project costs, it really was clear that we would not be able to do that. People asked if we could phase the construction during a time when people were camping there, and it was clear that that would have created a lot of negative camping experience for folks over various years, created a safety implication that we weren't willing to take on, and we would have had large revenue losses there as well, with people concerned about the poor quality of the experience. So we did look at two. I'll just point you to number three and number five on this screen. Number five was the idea that what if we worked with a large construction company? So as opposed to the mid-sized ones whom we usually work with at this end of the province and the sort of 20 to 40 size person crew, what if we looked at a really large one, like the 60 or 90 construction crew, basically a large HRM kind of company? And if they could build it all in the off season, and then in that instance, we could perhaps do it without having any impacts to our camping season and to visitors and local businesses. So we did actually go out on the Government of Canada procurement website, buy and sell, solicited interest to see if folks would be interested from those larger companies. And it came back clearly that those companies were not interested in committing to a project of this size so far out of HRM and with the constraints of building in the wintertime in the middle of the woods, ultimately. And also that there were too many risks associated with whether or not we could deliver the project given that kind of interest or commitment from the industry. So we did end up with identifying that a full season closure in 2020 would be the only way that we could accommodate this scope of work. Feeling that it's the only way that we could basically ensure that the project was delivered on time and on budget, that it was safe for staff and visitors, and it affected the campers with the least amount of negative camping experience. So we chose 2020 as our closure period as opposed to 2019. We kind of did our analysis and consulted with industry and concluded that in August of this year that just passed. We concluded that we needed 18 months to alert both our visiting public and also the tourism industry, because that's a pretty, 18 months is about what you need for the tourism industry for promotions and planning and so on. So we announced it in August with the intent to have the closure in 2020. And just for, and I can speak more about this, but just in broad strokes, the idea is that we'll be going out to tender on this project just after Christmas, so January 2019. 2019 camping season would be exactly the same as normal, so there'll be no changes to the 2019 season. And then after the campground closes, basically in essence this time next year, that we would close then and commence our construction all the way through until opening of 2021. So we, in essence, lose the camping season in 2020. Now, we understand and have been highly attuned to the fact that this is going to pose challenges for the local community in terms of what the economic benefits are. We see clearly, and Mayor Dagley and I had a chance to talk about this as well as with Councillor Johnson, that it is clear that Kejimkujik does anchor the regional tourism economy and especially the North Queens area. And so the challenge of being closed for the season is one that we have not taken lightly. I think there are a couple things that I would say about that. First of all, and although we were clear about the communications of this, I think people understand or they leap to the idea that we're closing the entire park. The campground is closed, but we are going to be going at sort of a high octane level for the rest of our offer at the park. So our beaches, our eatery, our programs, our special events, all of that stuff will still be ongoing through 2020 during the closure year. Second thing I'd say is that we do recognize that this investment is required in order for us to continue to play a pivotal and anchor role in the tourism economy going forward. Our assets are at the point where they are starting to fail. We understand that the camping market, both in the US and Canada, is continuing to rise, but it's also a very sensitive market. They want clean bathrooms, they want quality experience. And in order for us to be relevant and still being a destination, we felt we had to invest. So we have to date had conversations with a lot of the major tourism businesses in the North Queens area, primarily accommodations and also restaurant food services in the area. And we've talked to them about some solutions and some measures for trying to mitigate this impact as we go forward into 2020. And I think what we've been looking to do, and we've had some really positive conversations both with the North Queens Board of Trade, again with Councillor Johnson, and we're interested in working also with Council and with the Board of Trade going forward to think about ways that we can make sure that we mitigate best going into 2020. So there are some ideas that we're looking at. We are ready to come forward with a really strong promotions campaign for 2019, i.e. to keep the visitors strong in 2019, which certainly benefits us in terms of our program, but also to maintain that level of commitment and support for local businesses. We would also then be looking to have a very strong promotions campaign for 2021, the sort of bringing people back campaign. And again, we've seen success with that in the way that White Point was able to do that in terms of their closure and rebuilding Milford House in a similar way. So we've been looking at models that they've had in terms of being creatively able to maintain contact with a loyal base. And then the other thing we'd be looking to do is to be really creative in what we offer for 2020. In terms of promoting special events and so on. We are also looking to package and partner and really do what we can do to promote local businesses through 2020. So for example, with restaurant businesses, we have a program that we're looking to bring online that supports local restaurants that will help facilitate the experience for people coming to Kitchimukujik just for the day, even if they're not there. So special package meals, packaged advertising that go along with day use experiences, etc. And then the other thing is that we, in talking to a lot of the local accommodations, B&Bs, etc., we actually have the sense that 2020 might be a boost for them, in as much as we will still be really promoting visitation to Kitchimukujik, and it's possible that those local B&Bs and chalets will actually do better in that year because we can package with them for programs or special events or entry with us. So we're looking to have those conversations. We are also interested to know whether there might be local business owners or local individuals that would be keen to ramp up alternate accommodations for the 2020 year. So just as a couple of examples, we have spoken to the North Queens Exhibition Grounds, who, as you well know, they're all set up for RVs and showers and washrooms and hookups and everything. They have all that infrastructure in place for basically 1 week of the year. So we've talked to them a little bit about whether they would like to capitalize on potentially the opportunity for 2020. Now, it's likely that people won't be planning a week-long vacation at the Caledonia Exhibition Grounds. But at the same time, what we anticipate is we may very well have people that show up at our doors not realizing, despite our best efforts for communication, that there is actually no camping available. And rather than turning them away to drive to Bridgewater or Annapolis or somewhere further away, can we not have them at a stay at a place close for one or two nights? So we're in conversations with them about that. We also do have a couple of entrepreneurs that have come forward with the interest of potentially launching a campground business venture starting in 2020 that they would maybe hope to see going forward. And it would be in our interest from Parks Canada to provide them any support we can from promotions and product placement, etc. There is also an idea, and again I would give credit to Councillor Johnson for this, about the idea is that, you know, is there a silver lining to this challenge? Is there a way within the North Queens community and through the Board of Trade that we can't have a larger discussion around themes such as buy local and supporting local businesses and using this kind of almost existential threat as a way to do that. So we've had the idea through the Board of Trade, who I'm lucky to sit on that that board as well, to put forward a steering committee with this as a subject, thinking about how we can't move forward with some solutions for 2020. And I think ideas around that, about how could local businesses capture some spin-off benefits from the construction that's going to be occurring over about an 18-month period. How are there ways that we can't rally together with businesses to try to put forward a bit of a buy local or community supportive initiative? So we are looking to have a special meeting of the Board of the Trade later this month and sort of start to strike that steering committee, again recognizing that we've got just shy of 18 months before some of the challenges actually are faced. We've got some time to plan and respond. So that's the main thing. I guess a couple of key messages. One item that we've been trying to communicate to our visiting public and to concerned constituents about this is that this is in fact part of the federal infrastructure program, that $2.8 billion that went to Parks Canada to help develop infrastructure. And although it's a challenge for a 2020 closure, we do in fact see this as a really important long-term investment. It has not been upgraded in 50 years, so we've got this little thing, as you saw on the sheet that I passed around, that you know, next year is our 50th birthday as a national park, so we're using this as a bit of a you know, a thing for us, a present to Kijimukujik for 50 years. It is also clear that we're responding through visitor surveys and feedback that we're getting, that this investment is targeted directly at where we're getting the most complaints from visitors around the quality of the washrooms and the location of the showers, and making those more of a modern offer. It is clear that after all of our analysis, including consultation with the industry, that we feel 2020 is the only way to do this safely and efficiently. And again, that theme that I mentioned, but we will continue to speak to, is that although the campground is closed, the park certainly is not, and we'll continue with a lot of our special events and programming to make a quality offer in the area. I think it's also clear that although most people will only see the work that's happening with the washrooms and showers, we are making the point that there's a lot of work going on with the essential infrastructure under the ground for sewer and water, that A, is absolutely essential that it gets done, B, is very expensive, and C, is complicated enough in a sort of dispersed utility system in the middle of the woods, that to do that kind of work with all the trenching and so on makes it clear that we would not also be able to have camping happening concurrently. And then I guess the other piece that I would say is that we are really looking to work with local partners and leaders on how to mitigate this through alternative accommodations or economic spinoff. And the way that we're looking to do that is clearly engage to, you know, whatever the level of interest is, both with local municipalities. We have had preliminary conversation also with Annapolis, with local businesses, with boards of trade, and community member groups, and also individuals, recognizing that this poses a real challenge, thinking about ways that we can't work a little bit creatively to move forward and some benefit coming out of this. One other question I would address also is that, you know, we have a fairly large workforce and we're proud of that. The last couple of years we've had, in 2017 we had over 110 people on our payroll. That was a big year obviously because of the 150th celebrations, but even last year we were just shy of 90 people. So we've had concerns from you know, community members about what this might do to employment for that year. I guess I would assure all of you that we have primarily seasonal staff and full-time staff who will not be affected by this. And the reason for that is because, you know, the same folks who work in the campground work on our other facilities. So our plan is just to retask them and reprofile where some of their effort is to be working in other areas. So we are not looking at any layoffs to do with this kind of closure. It is probably the case that we will hire less students in that year than we will in other years. But I think in terms of from an economic, from a community perspective, this is not going to have an employment impact. And I guess our hope is that if we're able to continue to drive positive revenue in 2021 and beyond, it may actually provide us further benefit and opportunity to hire more students, et cetera, going forward. And I guess I would say that we're speaking about this in a sense a little bit early. We have not tendered this project yet, so some of the certainty that we might prefer to have before going out before public, we actually don't have. So we don't know the full. We don't have a clear idea exactly what the project budget is until we've gone through that tendering process. There are some uncertainties there. But I guess what I would say is that we felt it was important enough to give people advance notice about the change in 2020 that we decided to go out a year and a half in advance, even before the tendering was complete, in order to be able to have conversations like this and with others in the community. So those are the key items I wish to bring forward to council, and be happy to have any discussion or questions as needed.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions or comments of councillors at this point?
How many full-time staff do you have?
So full-time staff is, we are largely seasonal operations. So full-time staff, it varies a little bit, but it's around 25 or so. In addition to that, though, we've got about almost another 50 seasonal staff. So who work anywhere between 4 months to 6 months of the year. And then when we round that out with additional term hires or student hires in the summer, our overall payroll is somewhere around 90 people.
Councillor Johnson.
Hey, Jonathan. Just one question, and I don't know whether you can answer it or not, and I understand the fact of it, and I know you haven't got your final budget down, but can you just give us an idea of how much is going to be turned back into the local economy from this project? Whether it's going to be subcontractors within North Queens County or however that's going to work?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So, initial tendering estimates on all this work is that it's going to be in the north of $4 million of construction work to do all of this. As I mentioned, my various options, one of those was to go to a large general contractor from HRM, just to see what that looked like. And if that was going to be in the instance where we were building on a compressed period of time in the off season. Because that didn't go forward, I think we're closer to what we had hoped to be the case anyway, which was to provide a large amount of construction time. So basically we're going to have almost a year and a half of construction time by the time this is done. And I think that will more favor smaller mid-sized companies that come from sort of Southwest Nova, the South Shore area, perhaps the Annapolis area. So when we tender this project, we don't have the ability to identify specifically local procurement or local contractors. But I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to sort of the actual architecture of the program, the way it's being structured, we're hoping that more local businesses will have an opportunity to subcontract on a mid-sized construction company that might come out of South Shore or the Annapolis Valley. We are not looking to do basically any of this work in-house, so all of that value that I talked about would be part of that initial contract package. And we'll be contracting both the utilities and the structural as one large project.
Like I said, I've said it all along, but every challenge is an opportunity. I think this is a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you for that, and I would say that our preliminary discussions with you about that have been very helpful, even in terms of guiding our discussion with the Board of Trade in North Queens to think about how we can turn this challenge into a more conversation around opportunity. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Councilor Fisk?
As usual, Jonathan, a great presentation. I sit here all day listening to you. you can really put it across.
Thank you.
Anyway, My question is, Queens County Fairgrounds, it's interesting that you had talked with them. And I'm just wondering, there's a pavilion there, a round pavilion. Is there any chance that the park itself, that their employees could get there and hit some sort of a presentation during that time while the campers are there? Or?
That's a great idea. We've talked a little bit about it. I think we would certainly be open to that. Our conversation so far has been fairly preliminary. We haven't actually presented yet to the board there for the exhibition, but we have talked to Peter Van Dyke, who's sitting in the chair role right now. And I think he would be really keen to look at for us to do that. And so we've looked at a couple opportunities, certainly promotion, but also doing some on-site programming
well,
there.
Well, I mean, to make sure it's in with the park. Maybe.
Exactly.
Another question is, another concern is the construction company, whatever you pick. You think the local business, such as the Home Hardware, would really benefit by that company?
That is absolutely our hope. Exactly. So when we've looked at it, I mean, I think probably the size of the crew might not benefit the accommodations providers,
yeah.
But I think the food services providers, hopefully the local restaurants and the hardware store, there are also tradespeople in the area. So I think our hope is that they would see benefit out of this. So one of the things, I mean, as I say, we can't really specify that in our tendering process, but once we have an awarded contract, and that's why I'm keen to, through the steering committee with the Board of Trade, if we can't put sort of a list together for that successful bidder, saying, okay, look, here are some of the services that are available in the North Queens area, if they can be part of that project, whether for procurement or for services, then that would absolutely be our hope, is to put that information forward. Yeah, no, thank you, Councillor Fix.
Councillor McLeod.
An amazing project you have in the future there, Jonathan. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Currently, how many campsites are there in the area that you're going to be doing here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the main campground has about 350 campsites. About half of those have electric service to them, and about half of them don't. In that location, there are also sort of what we're calling diverse accommodations. So there are some rustic cabins. There are also a few sort of soft-sided, almost like outfitter tents that people just come and rent. They don't actually have to bring their own tent, Authentics. Exactly. And actually, it's a picture of one just on the screen right now. So yeah, it's about 365 if you put all of those together. It is important to note that we have, you know, another 45 backcountry campsites, which actually really are a singular part of the Kejimkujik offer. Those will all be running as per normal, even in the 2020 closure year. And we get somewhere around 15,000 people that come through and use just those backcountry sites in a year. So we would still be anticipating that level of visitation coming through even in 2020 when it's closed.
Expecting the communities then to try to accommodate folks that want to come, but you can't even have the spots available in 2020. And I know that there's, with the campground, mm-hmm. with the North Queens Fairgrounds, and of course you have Hibernia Campground too as well. That might be an option. But I'm wondering whether there's lots of space in North
Absolutely.
Queens that people could then fill that void for you for that term. And I know the province has, they can offer temporary camping licenses.
Mm-hmm.
So is that possible for you folks to work with others and that might want to set up an area for that time?
Yeah, exactly. We've had a couple of meetings with some entrepreneurs already, and actually also with Richard Lane with the mm-hmm. with the municipality here, to have some of those discussions with people who have demonstrated some interest in that. I think we could certainly do that. And one of the messages that we've given to them is that, you know, I think there is a rising tide floats all boats kind of story here, that if somebody had a temporary license to go forward with alternative accommodations, it would actually be in our interest at Parks Canada if they had a viable business model going forward as well. We have more camping interest than we have occupancy, so we, you know, I think we would like to drive even more people to the North Queens and Queens County generally than we're able to accommodate ourselves. And there are also parts of the market which we are not in a position to service, but other people could be. So for example, part of the visiting market who have really large RVs who are looking for water, sewer, and electric hookup at each of their sites and have RVs that are too big for our campground, it would be great if something like that was available, for example. Other kinds of cabins or chalet businesses, perhaps there'd be an ongoing viable model for that as well. So, you know, I think if there was an entrepreneur who could make it work for 2020 and get a foot in, then I think we would work with them also to figure out ways to promote that ongoing.
And I know, of course, you have the Seaside adjunct here, so it might be an opportunity for folks to maybe a transportation to bring them into the Seaside adjunct. Kind of, you know, that as so, as a way of saying, okay, this is the impact on you, and maybe we'll just make it a little bit easier for you to see the other sites we have available, including Springs and South as well.
I'm really glad you raised that, because one of the things that we have been talking a little bit about is, you know, this does provide us a year to put extra promotions and attention on Kitchen-Kujik Seaside. It is also an iconic experience in Nova Scotia overall. We have the sense just from our numbers there that it drives visitation to the South Queens area. And in this year, it would, as you say, be a really good time for us to flag and put forward how what a quality experience that is. So that's actually something that's cooking in the background for us is a little bit is how do we ramp up that location for 2020. And the nice thing about that is that, you know, the TH Rattle is right there in terms of their campground. There are lots of accommodation providers in the South Shore as well. So, you know, we would look to drive that as well in 2020.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
Yes, Jonathan, just a few things. Just my mind goes so many ways and try to put it all together. But one thing that council required it brought up, I'll bring it all out there and then you can be able to answer how you can handle it.
It's great.
Of packaging is what you're trying to do here and trying to look at is whether somebody could be anywhere. You could be even at Hank Snow and say, you come here, you put your vehicle here, and we're going to give you a package to go out to the kitchen for the day. And we'll take with our transportation system, such as it is now, that we can be able to use things like that. You'd be able to say, we'll get you in a central location or wherever you're going to be and package you and try to promote that more and more. One thing, of course, is always a concern is you have your regulars
mm-hmm.
come every year.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be broken in that year. When you break a cycle, you know how that works. You know, also they find a different place and they're comfortable and they don't want and they may not come back. You will lose some people that way.
Absolutely.
Because people will get comfortable into a different situation or a different place where all their friends all go together and they and it's all about groups. Right, if they go, because most people don't go by one, they go by groups when they come in. So you could lose a group when you do that. So it's a matter of getting that group to still want to be there, knowing that you've lost the camping, but you haven't lost the whole park. The whole park's still available.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so then you're trying to say, how do we bring all the group together and be able to hold them? I think back, of course, that would show my age, but the when I lived out in Caledonia, we said, you spoke to the park and things. There was, I know before the park houses, there was a road there off to the left.
That's right.
Back that road down over the hill.
Yep.
There was always a long, there was a house way back there, and they used to always have camping.
Mm-hmm.
You know which spot I'm talking about?
I know exactly which place you mean, yeah.
Is that grown up now, or is that still something? I don't know if they had power or if they had water.
They did have power at the time.
Yeah.
That property has since been purchased by a German family, and the field has mostly grown up now.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, because I thought of the same property when we were looking at this.
Yeah.
I think there are other ones that may be more doable where the landowners are actually interested in potentially having a bit of an entrepreneurial boost around this.
Okay.
There's one in South Parkfield which we've been in conversation with that they may be interested in that. There's actually also one in Maitland Bridge too. So, you know, our hope is that people will come forward with that.
Yeah.
Your point about how important groups are, I think is absolutely true. And one of the things that we're looking at with this investment also is how does this put us in a better position to capture some of the group dynamics and ways that the groups are using the site. So one of the challenges, which many of you are probably aware of, is that in 2012 our budgets were affected as part of an overall federal initiative, and at that time we no longer had an active winter offer. One of the things that we see with this infrastructure is that it then allows us to be in a much better place to put forward again some winter services and winter offers. So our buildings will be winterized. We'll have the ability for showers and washrooms in the winter. And one of the things we've heard from local businesses and local constituents is that that winter offer, especially in the fall, was extremely important for them from a tourism perspective, because Nova Scotia tourism at the provincial level was driving that period, and then we were closed. So this is hopefully a way that we can tap back into that with a benefit to local communities. The other thing I guess I would say, and you raised a point, I think, which is really important about that potential to lose people during, during the year we're closed. And I think that's true, so we're bracing for that. At the same time, we're looking at a couple strategies for that. One is to figure out ways that we can maintain contact with that loyal base during the time when there isn't camping there. And so, a social media presence, just like a game White Point did or the Milford House did that when they were having to do their rebuilds. I think the other thing is that we will be really clear in our messaging that part of what we're addressing in this infrastructure development is in fact some of the main concerns or complaints that we got from our loyal visitor base. So they wanted better showers and they wanted new washrooms, and we're partly making the point that this is what they're going to get when they come back. We don't want to lose any of our loyal base, absolutely. I guess what I would say in addition to that, though, is that we have been really surprised pleasantly by how much new market attention we've been getting, especially out of Halifax, for new Canadians, urban families. We get huge multi-generational families. This comes back to your point about groups, multi-generational families that are coming that are, Indonesian or Indo-Canadian or Chinese families, and they're coming in groups of, 14 or 15 cars. And, so I think we feel that we will still be able to be full because we've got lots of demand. But we do have a particular focus also on trying to preserve our loyal base. And one of those is Councillor McLeod said also, is the idea that we work with some of the local accommodations providers, not just in the North Queens area, but we have reached out to all the other provincial, municipal, and private campgrounds in sort of the Queens County and Annapolis County area, like in about a 45-minute drive from us. We've reached out to them to see what we can't do about packaging with them to help with promotion and packaging so that people will still feel they can come to Kijimkujik for a camping experience.
Just one other little thing there was that, can you, on Kedji in itself, is there possibilities of being able to make temporary camping areas that you can be able to at least maintain some of the 350 that...
Yeah, that's a great question. The answer is yes, but not a lot. When we tender this project, if you're familiar with our campground, there's one part by Kedji Beach, which is where the group campground is, which is separate from the three main loops. So what we're looking to do through the tendering process on this one is actually have that facility completed before opening of 2020, so that we would be able to have a group campground offer, an authentic offer, and a rustic cabin offer going forward at that location with increased tenting sites anyway. So that would be able to maintain some contact and some revenue stream even while the other three loops are closed. So we would look to do that. We did also look to see if we couldn't create more sites by, some of our main day use areas, like our Jake's Landing area or Mary McKedge, which have large parking lots. And we looked at whether or not we couldn't convert some of those to temporary camping. And in the end, we decided not to. And the reason for that is that we would have had to, quote unquote, cannibalize all of our day use space in order to create what was only a couple of dozen camping spots. And if we had done that, sure, we would have got a couple of dozen camping spots, but we would have then lost our ability to really promote Kijimkujik as a day use offer and all of its day use experiences. So in the end, we decided not to do that and then just hope to have alternate accommodations coming from local communities fill the gap.
Yeah.